Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the NovaM Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Sorry about last night. I think we have the situation under control. Let's hope. Thanks for hanging with us through some technical difficulties. Odd that it always happens the third hour, but I don't. I think we've got it pretty much taken care of, right? So, as my chiropractor used to say, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the program. It's about 7 past the hour. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, obviously. Right before program time, I got this from one of our listeners. It comes from the Telegraph of the UK. And it's fairly disturbing, given where we are in all sorts of relations, domestic and foreign, around the globe right now. I'm starting to get a little bit tense. I have to tell you, I'm starting to get just a tad nervous, more nervouser than normal. But this comes from the Telegraph of the UK. And under the headline, NATO must prepare to launch nuclear attack. With must prepare to launch nuclear attack in quotes. It's from a report. A group of former senior military officials has warned that NATO has got to prepare preemptive nuclear attacks to ward off the use of weapons of mass destruction by its enemies. The authors of the report are calling for a major change to NATO's approach to defending its members and their interests. And the report has been handed off to NATO and Pentagon chiefs. The report says the first strike use of nuclear weapons was a, quote, indispensable instrument, end quote. The first strike use of nuclear weapons was an indispensable instrument. This is how far we've come since the pledges by both the United States and the old Soviet Union that there would be no first strike use of nuclear weapons. The authors of the blueprint for reforming NATO are understood to include the former British chief of the defense staff, that would be Lord Peter Inge, and the former NATO commander in Europe and former chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff, General John Shalikashvili. The report said, quote, the risk of further proliferation is imminent, and with it the danger that nuclear warfighting, albeit limited in scope, might become possible, end quote. Limited in scope? This is the really, really terrible part of this. It is bad enough that the major military alliance in which the United States is firmly placed, that would be NATO, it's bad enough that they are considering, or not considering, they are recommending a report, internal report, is recommending that the NATO countries prepare whatever's necessary to prepare for first strike capability with the use of nuclear weapons. That's bad enough. What makes it murderously psychotic is that they're saying that such nuclear warfighting would be, quote, limited in scope, end quote. Limited in scope. It goes on to say, quote, the first use of nuclear weapons must remain in the quiver of escalation as the ultimate instrument to prevent the use of weapons of mass destruction, end quote. Now, that is insane language. The first use of nuclear weapons must be on the table to prevent the first use of nuclear weapons. This is madness. I mean, there is no getting around this. This is total, complete madness. The document reportedly includes the former British chief's comments on the controversy surrounding nuclear weapons policy. Lord Inge is quoted as saying, quote, to tie our hands on first use or no first use removes a huge plank of deterrence, end quote. The report warns that the spread of nuclear technology means there is, quote, simply no realistic prospect of a nuclear-free world, end quote. So they've thrown in the towel, truth seekers. There simply is no realistic prospect of a nuclear-free world. That's it. That's the first time I've ever seen anything like that in print, or as a matter of prepared, recommended policy. No realistic prospect of a nuclear-free world. The report goes on to say terrorism, political fanaticism, and religious fundamentalism are major threats to the West, and organized crime, climate change, and migration on a mass scale poses dangers to the way of life of NATO members. Okay, so nuke them. The report's authors also cite the weakening of global alliances, including the United Nations. That is deliberately and specifically the neoconservatives who run the United States now. That's what they have done. The authors have proposed major changes to the way NATO operates, including abandoning consensus decision-making so that fast action can be taken without the threat of vetoes and caveats imposed by some nations. No more consent. You know what consensus decision-making is? That's what the nuclear freeze movement used back in the 70s. It was very simple. If an idea was put forth to accomplish a specific goal, all different approaches to accomplishing that goal had to be considered in the final decision. It's very simple. If you had eight or nine factions in the nuclear freeze movement who said, well, we think it should be A. No, we think it should be B. No, we think it should be C, D, E, F, G, H. No decision was made. No policy was put forward until all of the ideas were incorporated. Consensus decision making. That way, every single input into an action taken would be considered and would be part of the action taken, which obviously resulted, the first thing it results in is total cooperation on the part of the people making the decision. So but that was designed for peace action. What they're talking about here is nuclear war. They want to abandon consensus decision making so that, their words, fast action can be taken without the threat of vetoes and caveats imposed by some nations. So if the United States approaches NATO and says it's time to drop nuclear weapons on Iran, the decision can be made very quickly without the other 18, 20, 25, however many nations are involved now in NATO, which has become an absolute joke, a farce, a Frankenstein monster. That's what it's become. Remember what NATO was originally put together? Oh, never mind. Anyway, the report also calls for military action without ratification by the United Nations in cases where, quote, immediate action is needed to protect large numbers of human beings, end quote. We're going to protect the Iranian civilian population by nuking the country in order to effect immediate action because large numbers of human beings in Iran are threatened by the Iranian leadership. There you go. That's what that means. The document will be discussed at a NATO summit in Bucharest in April. The three other authors, including the American and the Brit, are Klaus Naumann, a German former military commander, Henk Vanden Bremen, a former Dutch military official, and Jacques Lanoxt. I can't pronounce his name. I'm sorry, my French is no good. The former French admiral and chief of defense. So there you have it. New NATO policy developed around the commitment to the first use of nuclear weapons without consensus. Spur of the moment. Let's do it. Kill, kill, kill. Like I said, I'm finally getting to the point where I'm starting to get a little bit concerned. All right, stick around. We have a lot of stuff to cover. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Want to twist the people's wrists. They're watching every move we make. We're all included on their list. Disagree. It's when the madman flicks a switch. The nuclear will go for me. The Illuminati have taken over.
nuclear weapons are de-alerted. They're not alert, however, it doesn't take them long to fire up if we need them. Our mission is to make sure we never need them on each other.
We never need them on each other. 21 past the hour. By the way, program note here. We're back on the air in San Francisco on the quake at a more reasonable time now, 9 p.m. to midnight local time. So welcome back to the Bay Area listeners. You don't have to be an insomniac to hear the program anymore. And many thanks to the new program director at the quake who made that decision. somebody put us on, 11 till 2 in the morning? Now we're back on 9 to midnight. So thanks to QKE for doing that. I want to get this out of the way. It also is kind of a buffer between what I just told you about NATO is now considering a new first launch of nuclear weapons policy on a decision-making basis that does not include the heretofore absolutely necessary consensus or approval from the United Nations or anything. If the United States and the UK decide that it's time to nuke Iran, let me just pick a country out of the hat. Iran. If it's time to nuke Iran, then nuking Iran shall be the order of the day. And by the time that order of the day is made clear to the people of good old planet Earth, it will be a fait accompli, and we will be trying to figure out where the nuclear dust cloud is going to, what direction it's going to drift in. Will it drift west to east or east to west? I don't like that. So as a buffer between that hideous story and the rest of the night's program, let us join the debates from last night in South Carolina. We've only got three clips here from these debates because you probably heard them so many times you got them memorized. But we've got Hillary criticizing Obama over his Reagan comments with the de rigueur interruptions by Obama. And then we have Obama responding to the criticism with the de rigueur interruptions by Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, we have Senator John Edwards. So let's play all three clips, starting with Hillary Clinton.
In an editorial board with the Reno newspaper, you said two different things because I have read the transcript. Mm-hmm. You talked about Ronald Reagan being a transformative political leader. I did not mention his name.
Your husband did.
Well, I'm here. He's
okay,
not.
Okay, well,
and
I can't tell who I'm running against
sometimes. Well, I think we both have very passionate and committed spouses who stand up for us, and I'm proud of that. But you also talked about the Republicans having ideas over the last 10 to 15 years.
I didn't say they were good ones.
Well, you can read the context of it.
Well,
it certainly came across.
I didn't say they were good ones.
Well, it certainly, came across in the way that it was presented, as though the Republicans had been standing up against the conventional wisdom with their ideas. I'm just reacting to the fact, yes, they did have ideas, and they were bad ideas. Bad for America. And I was fighting against those ideas when you were practicing law and representing your contributor, Resco, in his slum landlord business in inner city Chicago.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, the schoolyard fight has been engaged. Now it's Obama's turn to respond to the criticism over his Reagan comments, which some, including moi, see as pandering to the right-wing voters who may still be on the fence. Don't forget, a lot of pundits are saying this election is going to be determined, at least the nominee for the Democratic Party is going to be determined by independent voters. Maybe, maybe not. Here's Obama.
Now, let's talk about Ronald Reagan. What you just repeated here today is patent. Wait, no,
Obama,
Hillary,
Obama,
you just
I not,
spoke.
I did not
just
say anything about
minutes.
Ronald Reagan. You said two
you just,
things. You talked
spoke,
about admiring
Hillary,
Ronald Reagan,
sorry,
and you talked about
you
the ideas of the
Senator,
Republicans. I didn't talk about
Hillary,
Ronald Reagan.
We just have the tape. You just said that I complimented the Republican ideas. That is not true. What I said, and I will provide you with a quote. What I said was, is that Ronald Reagan was a transformative political figure because he was able to get Democrats to vote against their economic interests to form a majority to push through their agenda, an agenda that I objected to, because while I was working on those streets, watching those folks see their jobs shipped overseas, you were a corporate lawyer sitting on the board of Walmart. I was fighting these fights.
Ah, so the little girl strikes out, the little boy strikes back. I think Barack Obama, while I wouldn't vote for Hillary if she was the last Democrat standing. I'm sorry. To me, she's not a Democrat. Absolutely, she's not. And I'm sick of voting Republican light. So Hillary does not have my vote. At one time, I thought maybe Obama did, but he does not either. Because, first of all, he's being weaselly. He's being like Bill Clinton here. When he says, what I said was that in Ronald Reagan, we had a transformative political figure because he was able to get Democrats to vote against their own economic interests. Is he suggesting that his statement the other day was to get Republicans to vote against their economic interests? Come on, Brock. Come on. Come on. Stop it. We have enough political weasels. Do you have to do it, too? You were caught by your own words, pal. Why not have the guts and the courage to stand behind what you said? John Edwards, when we come back.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. All right, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, which truly, and at this point I really don't care which one of these candidates, quote, started it, end quote. I don't care. They were back at each other's throats again today. This is absolutely obscene, and a pox on both their houses. Astonishing stuff. We are at a crossroads. Oh, I hate that cliche. We are at a place in human history where every single person who's in a position of power has got to be absolutely in control of themselves. They've got to be able to analyze, to make decisions, to think clearly. And we have these two, whom media in America have determined, one of whom is going to be the Democratic nominee for president, and one will probably be president. We have these two like a couple of cats in a sack, a couple of kittens in a sack. This is absolutely obscene. And then on the sidelines, you have Slick Willie, who just keeps pouring gasoline on the fire. This guy's out of control. Somebody ought to stuff a cheeseburger in his mouth, give him a couple of interns, and sit his ass down somewhere. Just take a break, Bill, okay? You had your 8 years. I know you want to get back, but shut the hell up. And somebody ought to tell Obama, he ought to grab a towel and dry himself off behind his ears and start acting like a 46-year-old man who wants to be president, and stop acting like some street punk who's got to strike back at Hillary Clinton, or who has got to swallow his own words and pretend like he didn't say them, or that the meaning was different. Both of these people are just making me insane. So let's hear the adult that was on the stage last night. The one person who benefited most from these debates, John Edwards. No wonder the majority of public opinion polls showed him winning the debates. Now, that's a fact that has a lot of Republicans very nervous, because they're terrified he might win the nomination. You see, the Republicans feel they got a shot at defeating Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, but not John Edwards.
What I want to say first is, are there three people in this debate, not two? And I also want to know on behalf of voters here in South Carolina, this kind of squabbling, how many children is this going to get health care? How many people are going to get an education from this? How many kids are going to be able to go to college because of this. We have got to understand, you know, and I respect both of my fellow candidates, but we have got to understand this is not about us personally. It is about what we are trying to do for this country and what we believe in. Now, fiscal responsibility, which I think was the question. It's right. A little hard to tell there after at the end of that. But I think the question was about fiscal responsibility. I have proposed, I think, the most aggressive, most progressive agenda of the three of us up here. You know, I was the first to come out with a universal health care plan, first to come out with a global warming plan, first, and to the best of my knowledge, only at this point, to come out with a comprehensive, detailed plan to end poverty in America since we are on Dr. King's Day. This is the cause of my life. Everything I have proposed, I have come up with a way to pay for. And I've been very explicit about how it should be paid for. Not abstract, not rhetoric, very, very explicit.
But you see, John Edwards is anti-corporate America, or at least that's the way he is being presented to the American media, which is part of corporate America. That's the way he's being presented by American media. So while Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton can stand there like a couple of high school juniors clawing at each other about who's going to be homecoming queen or who's going to be the gentleman that gets to escort the homecoming queen, John Edwards is trying to make some sense of all this. And he's third in the so-called polls, right? Jesus. Now, not for this debate. As far as public opinion polls are concerned, not that public opinion polls are worth a damn. You know what's worth a damn? How many delegates you show up at the convention with? And right now, I believe Barack Obama has right now he has the most delegates. That's going to change on Super Tuesday. What a shame! What a shame! The situation in Gaza has got to be talked about, so I'll do it. The Arab League and European Union have led worldwide calls now for Israel to end its four-day blockade of the Gaza Strip. The suffering by the million-plus people that live there is reaching a point of crisis proportions. Once again, Israel is violating, like the United States violates at will, the basic precepts of civilized behavior. Collective punishment, yes. There are people in Gaza who launch rockets into occupied, what is considered by the Palestinians to be occupied Palestine. Yeah, that's happening. There are settlers who are being chased out of their homes by these rockets. Yes, that's happening. So the way to handle that, of course, is to punish a million people, including God knows how many children. Cut off their fuel supply. Cut off their electricity, cut off their water, cut off their food, cut off their medical supplies, and let the sons of bitches sit there and rot. This from God's chosen people? Really? My goodness. Delegates from the 22 Arab states called on the United Nations, quote, to carry out an international inquiry into Israel's crimes, end quote. The Gaza Strip is being described by everyone. Peace groups inside Israel, Jewish peace groups inside Israel, Hamas, Hezbollah, Egyptians, everybody that is aware of what's going on. You and I, the American public, we're not aware. You want this? Go to aljazeera.com or aljazeera.net. Go to the English version and read. Go to the European press. Go to the British press. Go to the Indian press. Go to the Asian press. But by God, you will not hear about this in the American press. You will not. The Arab League Secretary General told Al Jazeera that what was happening in Gaza was, quote, a war crime, end quote. He urged the international quartet, that would be the UN, the European Union, Russia, and the United States, to put pressure on Israel. The Arab League Secretary General, Amir Moussa, said, this is not terrorism, as Israel is claiming. He's talking about the rockets being launched out of Gaza into Israeli settlements. He goes on to say, quote, the real problem is the Israeli military occupation. And Israel, as an occupying nation, has a responsibility to protect the rights of the people of the occupied land, end quote. and they have been occupied now for 41 years. Benita Waldner, European Union External Relations Commissioner, was also strong. She accused Israel of carrying out, quote, collective punishment of Gaza's 1.5 million people. She warned that neither the closure of Gaza's border nor the deadly airstrikes and incursions of the past week would bring Israel security from rockets fired by Palestinian armed groups. She said, quote, only a credible political agreement can turn Palestinians away from violence, end quote. Wasn't there just a great big old peace meeting in Bethesda, Maryland? Oh, that's right. That was this half-witted jackass of a president pretending like he was doing something important. Hosni Mubarak, the Egyptian president, phoned Ehud Olmert, the Israeli prime minister, yesterday to stress, quote, the need to stop the Israeli aggression against the Palestinian people, end quote. Mubarak also warned of, quote, the deteriorating humanitarian situation resulting from the blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip by Israel, end quote. The Lebanese prime minister said, quote, Israel is profiting from the international silence to unleash its rage against the inhabitants of Gaza, end quote. In Amman, Jordan, about 2,500 people marched from the headquarters of Jordan's main opposition party. Opposition party, the ones that don't support King Abdullah. They marched and they chanted, Bush, Olmert, you are despicable. Our blood is not cheap. Thousands of university students protested in Algiers. And on and on and on. About the only group that is busy in Gaza right now, according to the BBC, are the gravediggers. But the gravediggers are facing an extra challenge because, you see, the cement that they once used to build the graves has run out because of the embargo, and now they're using bathroom tile grout. That's what they're using. Hospitals are reporting they're running out of drugs and parts for medical equipment. People on ventilators, people needing emergency surgery, too bad. Not going to happen. Last week was when Israel announced it was closing all the border crossings into Gaza. Israeli officials said that was in response to the almost continuous rocket fire from the territory onto neighboring Israeli towns and villages. UN agencies are warning that the humanitarian situation in Gaza is getting worse. The only power plant in Gaza still operating was shut down Sunday. And it goes on and on.
Peace, salam, shalom.
The government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization represented respectively Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and President Mahmoud Abbas.
That's good, Chuckle Nuts. That's real good. That's real good. So it's about 10 before the hour. Now, here's one more reason, if you still need any, to pretend like Ron Paul is not a candidate for president of the United States, but just another Republican shill from, although an insane one, from Texas. And that's about food poisoning. This was an Associated Press story from today. It was carried in the Atlanta paper. It's a dirty little secret about food poisoning that E. coli and certain other foodborne illnesses can sometimes trigger serious health problems years after patients survived the initial bout of, you know, diarrhea and vomiting and headaches and dehydration and the use of antibiotics and almost dying. But scientists now are discovering something that has, to this point, largely gone unnoticed. What they've spotted so far is troubling, to say the least. In interviews, they describe high blood pressure, kidney damage, even full kidney failure, striking 10 to 20 years later in people who survived severe E. coli infections as children. They're discovering arthritis after a bout of salmonella or shigella, a mysterious paralysis that can attack people who had just a mild symptoms of Campylobacter. Is that how you say that? All these foodborne bacterias and viruses. A spokesman for the CDC here in Atlanta said, folks often assume once you're over the acute illness, that's it. You're back to normal. And that's the end of it. Not so. And they cite one example, Alyssa Trobuck of Seattle. She was one of the people who at age 5 was hospitalized as part of the Jack in the Box hamburger outbreak 15 years ago. That made the E. coli strain notorious. She's now, 15 years later, she's 20. She has, she's a successful college student, but here's some of the problems she has as a result of that E. coli infection: high blood pressure, recurring hospitalizations for colon inflammation, a hiatal hernia, thyroid removal, endometriosis. She goes on to say, would I have this many medical problems if I hadn't had the E. coli? Definitely not. And of course the CDC says that foodborne illnesses cause about 325 hospitalizations and 5,000 deaths a year. Now, what has this got to do with Ron Paul? Because Ron Paul, as weak as the Food and Drug Administration is, Ron Paul would do away with it. Ron Paul is an Ayn Rand free marketeer. If the food is poison, if it is contaminated, you'll stop buying it and buy from someone who puts uncontaminated food out there. Now, what does that mean? Well, it just means using the Ron Paul libertarian approach. You buy food, you get sick. Lesson learned. You don't buy that food again from that store or that distributor if you can figure out who in the hell the distributor was. But that's the end of that story. Ah, not quite. Because without the FDA, without some sort of government oversight, you see, 15 or 20 years later, that poison food that was put out there because there's no longer any FDA, 15 or 20 years later, you're going to be sicker than hell. You're going to have physical ailments that's going to make you probably shorten your life by a considerable period of time, incapacitate you. Now, I'm not saying for a moment here the Food and Drug Administration is doing what it should be doing. That's thanks to Reagan, to a lesser degree Clinton, and certainly this moron we have in the White House. The degradation of these oversight agencies, these regulatory agencies, has almost been completely perfected. And a libertarian, or another Republican for that matter, in the White House will pretty much bring that to fruition, or at least an attempt will be made. The Congress writes the laws, but who makes the appointments? Who makes recess appointments? How many people that head regulatory agencies in the U.S. right now are experienced in the field that they should be experienced in order to oversee these various corporate monsters? Who? Quick answers, none of them. They're all political shills for the Republican neocons. So someone like Ron Paul would do his damnedest, as would most Republicans, but especially a right-wing neo-Nazi libertarian like Ron Paul. Sorry, I really don't care if that pisses you off. If you're a Ron Paul supporter, you've got to be out of your mind. You really do, because you don't understand what the man's about. You're probably 19 years old and been in college for a couple of years, and, you really do believe that this is the answer to all the problems. Get government out of everything because you've had your head completely scrubbed of any kind of rational, the ability to make rational thought processes operate inside your punkin' little head. Or maybe you're 35 and you're just tired of paying taxes. Oh, damn, I'm sick of taxes. Ron Paul, get rid of taxes. Jesus. It's not just the Republicans that have an exclusive franchise on political idiocy. So do the Democrats. Look at Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Ron Paul. My grandmother told me always be suspicious of a man who has two first names. Yeah, well. Kathy says, like John Edwards. Edwards is not a first name. Edward is. Ron Paul. Ron Paul, bring your ass in here. Yes, Aunt Polly. The Supreme Court, I told you last week, the Supreme Court had decided last week that they would not allow a class action suit or separate suits against suppliers doing business with a cable TV company engaged in securities fraud. Now they have ruled today that everybody who got screwed by Enron is just out of luck. There will be no lawsuits against whatever assets Enron still contains. I've got some more on this when we come back to, from the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This Supreme Court decision today not to hear the case of the Enron investors is kind of interesting. This deals a real serious blow to all those people who got burned, who sued major investment banks to recover money lost when Enron collapsed as a result of massive fraud. This action by the Supreme Court takes away what is probably the only hope of these people of keeping the case alive. Now, you remember Enron wiped out thousands of jobs, the $50, $60 billion in market value down the toilet, and $2 billion in pension plans. An awful lot of people were left just hanging. What's the Bush reaction to this, the Bush administration reaction to this? Well, first of all, the turndown today for the Enron investors came with no comment from the Supreme Court. That's usually how they do it. They just list the cases the justices had decided not to hear, and this was on that list. And I like this. The suit was politically sensitive for the Bush administration because of its potential to affect the Enron case. The administration, the Bush administration, sided with the business community against investors, despite the recommendation of the Security and Exchange Commission to side with the investors. So the Bush crime family decided, screw the people who put up the money. Screw the people whose retirement funds were destroyed. Screw the people who lost their jobs. The Bush crime family, and for you Republicans, you conservatives who listen to this program but don't have the courage to call in, are you aware of that decision today, or do you really not care? You probably don't care. So the Bush crime family sided with the screwers, not the screwees. No surprise there, right? And then there was this. This is astonishing. This first story is from January 17th, last week. And the second story is from January 19th, 2 days later. So one is from Thursday, one is from Saturday. They're both reported by the Reuters news agency. Here's the first one. Canada places the U.S. and Israel on a torture watch list. The Canadian Foreign Ministry put the United States and Israel on a watch list of countries where prisoners risk being tortured. And it also classified some U.S. interrogation techniques as torture, according to a document obtained by Reuters on Thursday. This revelation is likely to embarrass the minority conservative government of Canada, which is a staunch ally of both the United States and Israel. Both of those nations deny they allow torture in their jails. The document, part of a training course on torture awareness given to diplomats, mentions the U.S. jail at Guantanamo in Cuba, where a Canadian man is being held. Under definition of torture, the document lists U.S. interrogation techniques such as forced nudity, isolation, sleep deprivation, blindfolding prisoners, waterboarding. A spokeswoman for the U.S. Embassy in Ottawa said, quote, "The United States does not permit, tolerate, or condone torture under any circumstances," end quote. A spokesman for the Canadian Foreign Minister tried to distance Ottawa from the document. The Foreign Minister said, quote, "The training manual is not a policy document and does not reflect the views or policies of this government," end quote. What happened was the government of Canada mistakenly, according to Reuters, mistakenly provided the document to Amnesty International Canada as part of a court case that Amnesty had launched against the government of Canada over the treatment of detainees in Afghanistan. The Amnesty Canada Secretary General told Reuters his group has very clear evidence of abuse in U.S. and Israeli jails. Other countries on the Canadian watch list include Syria, China, Iran, Afghanistan, Mexico, and, of course, Saudi Arabia. The Israeli embassy spokesman, Michael Mendel, in Ottawa, the Canadian Israeli embassy spokesman in Canada, said, quote, "If Israel is included in the list in question, the ambassador of Israel would expect its removal." Okay, that was on Thursday. Here's Saturday. Canada takes U.S. and Israel off the torture watch list. Canada's foreign minister, responding to pressure, said on Saturday it will remove the United States and Israel from a watch list of countries where prisoners risk being tortured. Both nations expressed unhappiness after it emerged that they had been listed in a document that formed part of a training course manual on torture awareness given to Canadian diplomats. Foreign Minister Maxime Bernier said he regretted the embarrassment caused by the public disclosure of the manual, which also classified some U.S. interrogation techniques as torture. Bernier said in a statement, quote, "It contains a list that wrongly includes some of our closest allies. I have directed that the manual be reviewed and rewritten," end quote. U.S. Ambassador to Canada David Wilkins said the listing was absurd, while the Israeli envoy said he wanted his country removed. Asked why the two countries had been put on the list to begin with, a spokesman for Mr. Bernier said, quote, "The training manual purposely raised public issues to stimulate discussion and debate in the classroom," end quote. 2 days. I wonder why it took 2 days. That's an extraordinarily long period of time. And yes, in a couple of moments, we're going to talk about the Sybil Edmonds blockbuster from one of Rupert Murdoch's papers in the UK, the Sunday Times. But let's do some phone calls here because some folks have been holding on too long here. Let's start with AJ, the Music Factory. Hey, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you today?
Getting by.
Well, good, good. Better dead than red.
I know that.
Yeah. Well, good evening to you and the whole Malloy family. I was listening to you last night, and I just had to put my two cents in about the stuff you said about Obama.
Okay.
At the risk of you losing your respect for me, assuming you have any. I don't disagree with you in theory, but in practicality, I have a different perspective because this psychotic in the White House has totally lowered the standards. And I have sort of been saying from, probably last January, that this is not going to be an election about subtleties. This is going to be an election about this way or that way, up or down. And the Red Menace, the Republicans, have broken the country. And I'm reminded of, you have a 3-year-old. You probably have scenarios like this regularly where, I remember when I spilled something or when I broke something and then I'd feel very bad and my mother or my father would, I'd say, can I help? Let me help clean it up. And they'd say, no, just go away.
Right.
And let me clean this up.
Right.
And then when this is cleaned up, then we'll talk.
Mm-hmm.
And really what we need now is just for the Republicans at all costs to get out of the room. Let's clean this up. Of course, it's going to take 20 years. And for that, all we need is a broom. Or as I've been saying, we need a tourniquet. And when you need a tourniquet, you'll reach for anything to stop the bleeding. When I put a utility knife into my thumb about 5-6 years ago, the first thing I grabbed was my wife's underwear. That was first choice.
All right, hold on. AJ, hold on. I got a break. Yeah. Let me put you on hold. You've presented your thesis. When we come back, I want to hear what your conclusion is. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M.
Stop. I learned, will you?
Take off, man.
Take off.
You're listening to Mike Molloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's over, but tomorrow will be the same. I know that there really is not to blame. If they were so blind, they truly lay see.
21 past the hour. We're talking with AJ, the Music Factory, who has called it from the Catskills. I've got your thesis here about getting the broom and sweeping the bastards out of D.C., the Republicans. Now, how does that tie into what I've said about the Obama comments?
Well, as I said, I agree with you in principle, but practically speaking, I speak for myself on this, I will vote for a Democratic tub of cottage cheese so that we can get these guys out. And you've said as much about leaders of the Congress and the Senate, is that we have to get Democrats in there, and then once we get them in, we slowly pick them off, and we advance a progressive and a sensible agenda.
Oh, yeah.
And we have to do that on a presidential level as well.
It's a lot more difficult. There's only one president. There's 535 members of the House and the Senate, and they can be picked off. They can look around and see fellow Democrats, quote-quote, being defeated by progressive Democrats. A president really doesn't give a damn. Take a look at Bush. The entire Republican Party has turned and fled from him. He doesn't give a damn. He just continues to do what he's doing. While I agree that we've got to get the Republican machine out of there, there is the Republican machine, and then as far as I'm concerned, there's Republican light machine.
There is.
And Hillary Clinton is at the top of that heap. As far as Barack Obama, I don't think he's Republican light. I just think If he gets his bloomers in this much of a wad over something that Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton tosses at him, what the hell is he going to do when if he gets the nomination and the Republicans slice and dice him and prove to the American public beyond a shadow of doubt that A, he's a Muslim, B, he's a drug user, C, he's a drug pusher,
yeah.
D, he's a Satan worshiper. E, he's got a white child stashed someplace in suburban Cleveland. What the hell is he going to do? Look what happened to John Kerry. John Kerry, a combat veteran, a senator, yeah, a presidential candidate, had his ass handed to him, turned around, and slunk into the woods like a whipped dog. Now,
yeah,
what is Barack Obama going to do if he can't withstand Hillary Clinton's nastiness? What's he going to do?
Well, I agree, and in theory, that's what the primary process is supposed to do, at least, is strengthen a candidate, test a candidate. And parenthetically, both my wife and I are for John Edwards as well. But we'll take second or third or fourth or fifth or sixth over any Republican candidate. We are, most of the time we walk around so upset we can't speak about this. We just can't talk because we're so nauseated by everything the Republicans say and do. And I don't think you can say that if a Democrat, even if it's Hillary Clinton, gets into the White House, that you would feel as despondent over the future as if McCain or Huckabee or that airhead Romney were to win, which, the prognosticators are saying that's not going to happen. But
if it's come to this, AJ, and I'm not saying it hasn't, if it's come to a matter of degrees, how do I want to die? Do I want to die choking to death because the air is no good? Do I want to do it with a Republican, which means I'll die choking to death in 5 years, or with a Democrat, which means I'll die choking to death in 7 years? There's a third way, and that's not to vote for either the Democrat or the Republican if they don't meet even the minimal standards. I used to be exactly where you're at. Give me second choice, third choice, fourth choice, fifth choice, anything but a Republican. And what I found out was, once you get beyond a certain level, you're just voting for Republicans. That's all.
And it bears repeating this tiny little crux of what I believe is where we part company on this issue is, I don't think it's a time for subtleties. I just don't.
I don't either. And you tell me the basic non-subtle differences between Hillary Clinton and George Bush.
Well,
I
didn't know there'd be a test. I'd have studied.
Well, that's kind of my point. It's not a time for subtleties. I completely agree with you. And the differences between Hillary Clinton or who else? Hell, I don't even know. Hillary Clinton and anybody on the Republican side, the differences are subtle. Hillary Clinton, according to Mother Jones magazine, Hillary Clinton is pro-war. She's pro-tax cuts for the wealthy. She is not against torture. I don't care what she says. Look at her voting record. She's pro-corporation. She's anti-choice. She's anti-privacy rights. She's anti-gay marriage. She's anti-immigrant. She's anti-working class. She's anti-union, and she's anti-environment.
Yes, and when her name flashes on the screen, it says Senator Hillary Clinton, and then in parentheses it says D.
Yeah.
And I am so screwed up by the last 8 years, Mike, that's enough for me.
Nah, no, it's not. No, it's not. You're like a lot of us. I got to leave there, AJ. We're out of time. You're like a lot of us. You're feeling those desperate, bony fingers closing around your neck. I feel the same feeling. Don't give up now, pal.
go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
I have a correction here. This is for you, AJ. I said that Hillary Clinton is anti-choice, according to Mother Jones. Well, first of all, it was a letter to the editor of Mother Jones by regarding a lengthy series. I think there were two articles on Hillary Clinton, or maybe it was just one. Several months back, about if you don't like Hillary Clinton, this may be the reason why, and it was a very pro-Hillary article, and it engendered a lot of letters to the editor, one of which listed those positions of Hillary I just mentioned. However, according to one of our regular listeners, here's Hillary's voting record on choice, and it kind of does a 180 on what I said. She, in October 2005, she voted the liberal line on partial birth and harmed a fetus. April 2007, she voted yes on expanding research to more embryonic stem cell lines. July 2006, voted no on notifying parents of minors who get out-of-state abortions. March 2005, voted yes on $100 million to reduce teen pregnancy by education and contraceptives. March 2004, voted no on criminal penalty for harming unborn fetus during other crime. March 2003, voted no on banning partial birth abortions except for maternal life. April 2001, recommended by Emily's List of Pro-Choice Women. December 2003, rated 100% by the National Abortion Rights Advocacy Group, NARAL, indicating a pro-choice voting record. That was in 2003. In 2004, voted to expand embryonic stem cell research. 2006, rated zero by the National Right to Life Committee, indicating a pro-choice stance. And in April of this year, 2007, voted to provide emergency contraception at military facilities. So I will issue an immediate mea culpa and say what I've said a lot of times to listeners. Check the record before you shoot off your mouth. Okay. All right. Hillary is pro-choice, which means, of course, pro-privacy. Now, before we move on to your phone calls, I've got to get the Sybil Edwards thing out, Sybil Edmonds, because it's been sitting here for a couple of days. First of all, from this past Sunday, the Sunday Times of the UK, which is a Murdoch paper, this kind of ties in what we were talking about earlier in the program about NATO's new position that first strike nuclear weapon, the use of nuclear weapons in a first strike is going to become part of NATO's policy. The FBI has been accused of covering up a key case detailing evidence against corrupt U.S. government officials and their dealings with a network stealing nuclear secrets. The assertion follows allegations made in the Sunday Times 2 weeks ago by Sybil Edmonds, FBI whistleblower, who worked on the agency's investigation of this secret network. Edmonds, a 37-year-old former Turkish language translator, listened into hundreds of sensitive intercepted conversations while based at the agency, the FBI's Washington field office. She says the FBI was investigating a Turkish and Israeli-run network that paid high-ranking American officials to steal nuclear weapons secrets. These were then sold on the international black market to countries such as Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. One of the documents relating to the case was marked 203AWF210023. Last week, however, the FBI responded to a Freedom of Information request for a file of exactly the same number by claiming it did not exist. But the Sunday Times has obtained a document signed by an FBI official showing the file does exist. Edmonds believes the crucial file is being deliberately covered up by the FBI because its contents are explosive. She accuses the agency of, quote, an outright lie, end quote. She said, quote, I can tell you that the file and the operations it refers to did exist from 1996 to February 2002. The file refers to the counterintelligence program that the Department of Justice has declared to be a state secret to protect sensitive diplomatic relations, end quote. Edmonds told the Sunday Times that members of the Turkish political and diplomatic community in the U.S. had been actively acquiring nuclear secrets. They often acted as a conduit, she said, for Inter-Services Intelligence, ISI, Pakistan's spy agency, because they, the Turks, attracted less attention or suspicion. She claimed corrupt government officials, U.S. government officials, helped the network, and venues such as the American Turkish Council, or the ATC, in Washington were used as drop-off points. The anonymous letter names a high-level government official who was allegedly secretly recorded speaking to an official at the Turkish embassy between August and December 2001. It claims the government official warned a Turkish member of the network that they should not deal with a company called Brewster Jennings because it was a CIA front company investigating the nuclear black market. The official's warning came 2 years before Brewster Jennings was publicly outed when one of its staff, Valerie Plame, was revealed to be a CIA agent in a case that became a cause célèbre in the United States. The letter also makes reference to wiretaps of Turkish targets talking to ISI intelligence agents at the Pakistan embassy in Washington. Edmonds is the subject of a number of state secret gags, preventing her from talking further about the investigation she witnessed. She says, quote, I cannot discuss the details considering the gag orders, but I reported all these activities to the U.S. Congress, the Inspector General of the Justice Department, and the 9/11 Commission. I told them all about what was contained in this case file number, which the FBI is now denying exists. She went on to say this gag was invoked not to protect sensitive diplomatic relations, but criminal activities involving U.S. officials who were endangering U.S. national security. Now, regarding that story, Daniel Ellsberg, writing today at consortiumnews.com, writes, for the second time in 2 weeks, the entire U.S. press has let itself be scooped by Murdoch's London Sunday Times on a dynamite story of criminal activities by corrupt U.S. officials promoting nuclear proliferation. But there is a worse journalistic sin than being scooped, and that is participating in a cover-up of information that demands urgent attention from the public, the U.S. Congress, and the courts. For the last 2 weeks, one could say for years, the major American media have been guilty of ignoring entirely the allegations of the courageous and highly credible source Sybil Edmonds, quoted in the London Times on 6 January 2008 in a front-page story that was front-page news in much of the rest of the world but was not reported in a single American newspaper or network. It's up to readers to demand that this culpable silent treatment end. Just as important, there must be pressure by the public on congressional committee chairpersons, in particular Henry Waxman and Patrick Leahy, who have been sitting for years on classified sworn testimony by Ms. Edmonds, as she reveals in the Times news story on Sunday, along with documentation in their possession confirming parts of her account, to hold public hearings to investigate her accusations of widespread criminal activities over several administrations that endanger national security. They should call for open testimony under oath by Sybil Edmonds, as she has urged for 5 years, and by other FBI officials she has named to them, cited anonymously in the first Times of London story. And this is the time for those who have so far credibly leaked to the Times of London to come forward, accept personal risks, and offer their testimony, both to the Congress and to the American press. I would say to them, don't do what I did, which was to waste months of precious time trying to get congressional committees to act as they should in the absence of journalistic pressure. Do your best to inform the American public directly, first through the major American media. But perhaps today the alternative media and the international press are a necessary precursor even to that. It shouldn't be true, but it is. It's a measure of how far the New York Times and the Washington Post have fallen from their responsibilities to the public, to their profession, and to American democracy since I gave them the Pentagon Papers in 1971. They printed them then. Would they today? It's impossible to believe that they could not have acquired documents and testimony that Murdoch's London paper reported on Sunday. Now the challenge to them is to end their silence on that reporting and do their job. Otherwise, like the now Democratic-controlled committees, they are complicit in a cover-up. That's not what these institutions should be doing. Daniel Ellsberg goes on in pretty much the same vein that this evidence that was presented by Sybil Edmonds, this reminds me, of course, of Greg Palast, investigative reporter, who was ignored by the American media for so long that he finally had to go to work for the British media. And here Sybil Edwards is having to take her story to, of all outlets, a Murdoch-owned newspaper. A little bit more on this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Who leaked? If anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
Yeah. So, regarding what the NATO working group has decided, the first strike nuclear weapons is... absolute must now. Got this email from Kathy in Green Bay about correct, there is no chance of a nuclear-free world. And Kathy writes, which reminds me of the kid who killed his parents and then asked for the court's mercy because he was an orphan. She writes, for crying out loud, we've stopped trying to stop proliferation and this administration has failed to keep Russian nuclear material safely stored. And then this month we learned this, quote, among the hours of covert tape recordings, Sybil Edmonds says she heard evidence that one well-known senior official in the U.S. State Department was being paid by Turkish agents in Washington who were selling the information onto black market buyers, including Pakistan. The name of the official, who has held a series of top government posts, is known to the Sunday Times. He strongly denies the claims. However, Sybil Edmonds said, quote, he was aiding foreign operatives against U.S. interests by passing them highly classified information, not only from the State Department, but also from the Pentagon, in exchange for money, position, and political objectives, end quote. She claims that the FBI was also gathering evidence against senior Pentagon officials, including household names, who were aiding foreign agents. In one conversation, Edmonds heard the official arranging to pick up a $15,000 cash bribe. Edmonds said, quote, I heard at least three transactions like this over a period of 2 years. There are almost certainly more. While that well-known senior State Department official is not named by the paper, Australia's Luke Ryland, who writes at a number of sites as Lukery, is perhaps the world's foremost expert concerning the Sybil Edmonds story. He has told the Brad blog that the official unnamed by the Times is Mark Grossman. Now, this goes on, but the point here, first of all, I would say that the senior State Department official, of course, would be Elliot Abrams. I have no doubt that Elliot Abrams is up to his eyeballs in this, just like he was in the Iran-Contra bloodbath. So Kathy writes, they're right, there's absolutely no chance of a nuclear-free world if our damn government keeps selling nuclear secrets to the highest bidder. Can we get impeachment back on the table? If we have photos of George Bush handing plutonium to Osama bin Laden, what the hell will it take to prosecute these criminals? What is extraordinarily upsetting to me is that an American FBI whistleblower has come forth with documentation of probably, short of absolute treason, one of the most serious charges to be leveled against top American officials, the selling of nuclear secrets, and that may be considered treason, to people other than to somebody outside the United States. Turkey is not an enemy. Pakistan is not an enemy. Israel is not an enemy. So Saudi Arabia is not an enemy. So maybe that does not constitute treason, but it damn sure constitutes something, doesn't it? Selling U.S. nuclear secrets to foreign governments, representatives of foreign governments. But Sybil Edmonds is up against the same thing that you're up against, Truth Seeker, and that is Nancy Pelosi's refusal to let the Constitution work and begin hearings on the crimes committed by these filthy bastards in the executive branch of the U.S. government. It's just not going to happen, is it? No matter what is revealed, it's just not going to happen. It makes the little pissing contest between Hillary and Obama just seem like what it is, a pissing contest. And that's what turns my stomach against the Democrats right now. With the hell that we're experiencing with U.S. just on the verge of an absolute financial meltdown, we've got to listen to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama calling each other names, you know, or hurling stuff back and forth. Well, you worked for a slumlord. Well, you were on the board of directors of Walmart. Well, your mama has a mustache. Well, yours has a humpback. What the hell is this? That's what we're listening. And it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. When's the next little Democratic Party mudfest? When is it? And who is it now? It's just Hillary and Obama and Edwards. That's it. None of the other, are they all gone? Everybody else is gone, huh? So those of you who send me the snotty-ass emails about my take on Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or any of these Democrats or the Democratic Party in general, kiss my grits, will you? If you want to sit back on your lazy ass and just buy what these political websites pump down your throat, or if you want to sit around on your ass and listen to CNN or MSNBC, go right ahead. But you're the one who's being put in the trick bag, not me. So, you know, I've gotten several emails, really snotty emails, like people who are just trying to tell me that not only am I crazy where it concerns Hillary, but I'm almost, I don't know, committing my own form of Democratic Party treason. Well, again, kiss my grits. If you feel that you come to your political point of view honestly, and I feel like I come to my political point of view honestly, well, then we have a difference of opinion. But as far as some of your kind of garbagey language, come on, get real. You're sounding like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, if you know what I mean. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. know. You remember going out to dance to this, don't you? What? Only if you're gay. Welcome back. 7 past the hour of the Molloy program on the Novam Radio Network. I just figured we needed a dance break and don't feel like a polka tonight. Come on, play a little more. Go ahead. Club night, huh? All right, so the 80s, so what? All right, we several listeners have sent this in the past few minutes. This is from the Associated Press. A study by two nonprofit journalism organizations found that President Bush and top administration officials issued hundreds of false statements about the national security threat from Iraq in the 2 years following the 2001 terrorist attacks. The study concluded that the statements, quote, were part of an orchestrated campaign that effectively galvanized public opinion and in the process led the nation to war under decidedly false pretenses, end quote. The study was posted Tuesday on the website of the Center for Public Integrity, which worked with the Fund for Independence in Journalism. White House spokesman Scott Stansel did not comment on the merits of the study Tuesday night, but reiterated the administration's position that the world community viewed Iraq's leader Saddam Hussein as a threat. The study counted 935 false statements in the two-year period. It found that in speeches, briefings, interviews, and other venues, Bush and administration officials stated unequivocally on at least 532 occasions that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction or was trying to produce or obtain them or had links to Al-Qaeda or both. According to Charles Lewis and Mark Redding Smith of the Fund for Independence in Journalism, writing an overview of the study, quote, it is now beyond dispute that Iraq did not possess any weapons of mass destruction or have meaningful ties to Al-Qaeda. In short, the Bush administration led the nation to war on the basis of erroneous information that it methodically propagated and that culminated in military action against Iraq on March 19, 2003, end quote. Named in the study, along with Bush, were top officials of the administration during the period studied: Vice President Dick Cheney, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of State Colin Powell, Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, and White House Press Secretaries Ari Fleischer and Scott McClellan. Bush led with 259 false statements, 231 about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and 28 about Iraq's links to Al-Qaeda. That was second only to Powell's 244 false statements about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and 10 about Iraq and Al-Qaeda. The center said the study was based on a database created with public statements over the 2 years beginning September 11, 2001, and information from more than 25 government reports, books, articles, speeches, and interviews. The study concluded, quote, the cumulative effect of these false statements, amplified by thousands of news stories and broadcasts, was massive, with the media coverage creating an almost impenetrable din for several critical months in the run-up to war. Some journalists, the study went on, indeed even some entire news organizations, have since acknowledged that their coverage during those pre-war months was far too deferential and uncritical. These mea culpas notwithstanding, much of the wall-to-wall media coverage provided additional independent, so-called, validation of the Bush administration's false statements about Iraq. End quote. And impeachment is still off the table? Son of a bitch. 935 lies in a two-year period. Are these high crimes and misdemeanors? Now it's documented. And the leader was this filthy pig Bush. And this house Negro, Colin Powell, and this murderous Donald Rumsfeld. and this filthy neocon killer Paul Wolfowitz. And Ari Fleischer and Scott McClellan. I'll say it again. Son of a bitch. I mean, just astonishing. This just went up 34 minutes ago. At the Associated Press website. 935 lies in a 2-year period. And that all led to the attack on Iraq, the occupation of Iraq, the deaths of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, nobody knows, U.S. soldiers and Marines, several hundred thousand Iraqi civilians. And yet tomorrow morning, this rat son of a bitch, George Bush, will still be squatting in the office of the presidency because the Democratic Party leadership is complicit. They're in on it. They're part of it. You remember shock and awe? Do we have some shock and awe? I think we have some shock and awe, don't we?
That's really rocks. That's very close. Very close to us. We've got to watch the windows here. I hope you can still hear me. I'm trying to maintain contact with you. A large bit of smoke. Another large flash of explosions to the west of the city. Can you hear me, Jeremy?
I can hear you, David. I'm now seeing huge balls of smoke rising into the night sky.
4 or 5 huge billows of smoke. A massive shock blast just coming through our windows. I'm going to have to take cover, Jeremy. I'm going to have to take cover.
We'll let you take cover, David. Very well.
500. On 532 occasions, Bush stated unequivocally that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. Bush and his filthy, murderous cohorts. Of those lies, 259 were lies right out of the pig's mouth. My God. So what are we going to do? Absolutely nothing, right? All right. Well, there's nothing we can do. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing you and I can do because we have standing between impeachment and the U.S. Constitution, Nancy Pelosi, and she will not be moved. She will not be moved. We have 3 leading candidates now for the Democratic nomination for president who utterly and absolutely refuse. In their position, 2 of them are United States senators who could at least make public statements that say George W. Bush should be removed from office as soon as humanly possible, and they will not. We have one who's a former senator who should also be saying the same thing. They should be prevailing upon their colleagues in the U.S. House to get these murderous bastards out of office, but they will not. They will not. They will not.
Was the question unasked? Won't you join in and fight with the Allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old. With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old. Fighters! Texaco. Fighters for power.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction.
So, at the website of the Center for Public Integrity, you will find the study put together by that organization and the Fund for Independence and Journalism, 935 lies in a two-year period regarding the run-up to the war in Iraq. In speeches, briefings, interviews, Bush and administration officials stated unequivocally on at least 532 occasions that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction or was trying to produce them or had links to Al-Qaeda or both. According to two of the authors of the study, it is now beyond dispute that Iraq did not possess any weapons of mass destruction or have any meaningful ties to Al-Qaeda. In short, the Bush administration led the nation to war on the basis of erroneous information that it methodically propagated and that culminated in military action against Iraq on 19 March 2003. Named in the study along with Bush were top officials of the administration during the period studied: Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Paul Wolfowitz, Ari Fleischer, Scott McClellan. Bush led with 259 false statements. Colin Powell, 244 false statements. The center said the study was based on a database created with public statements over the 2 years beginning September 11, 2001. The study concluded that the statements were part of an orchestrated campaign that effectively galvanized public opinion and in the process led the nation to war under false pretenses. Named in the study along with Bush were Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Paul Wolfowitz, Ari Fleischer, Scott McClellan. It is now beyond dispute that Iraq did not possess any weapons of mass destruction or have ties to Al-Qaeda. In short, the Bush administration led the nation to war on the basis of erroneous information that it methodically propagated and that culminated in military action against Iraq on 19 March 2003. The cumulative effect of these false statements, amplified by thousands of news stories and broadcasts, was massive, with the media coverage creating an almost impenetrable din for several critical months in the run-up to war. Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, Paul Wolfowitz, Ari Fleischer, Scott McClellan, George Bush.
Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda.
Just astonishing. Unbelievable. And impeachment's off the table. Well, the article now that's out there by the Associated Press, I'm sure it'll be all over the major newspapers tomorrow. Maybe it won't. In fact, why should it be, since so many news organizations were complicit in this? They refused to do even basic research. Is there any truth to this? But let's assume that it will be out there. So what? Will this be on the front page of the New York Times, above the fold? Well, it's a little bit late. It's 11:35 here in the East. Usually tomorrow's edition of the New York Times goes to bed about 9:30 in the evening. Eastern time. Will it be in the LA Times? It's only 8:35 out there. The LA Times just fired another one of their senior editors in order to save money. Will it be in the Tribune, Chicago Tribune? It's only 10:35 in Chicago. Will they publish it? How about the Washington Post? So, looks like you and I are stuck with it, Truth Seeker. I don't know how to process something like this. Do you? Does anybody know how do you process this? Seriously, how do you do it? How do you say to yourself, "Oh, really?" The Center for Public Integrity and the Fund for Independence and Journalism have just published a report at their website. The study counted 935 lies in the 2-year period leading up to the Iraq War. Everything about the Iraq War was a lie. Now, what are the families who have lost sons or daughters in Bush's Army and Marine Corps? What are those families going to do? I'll tell you what they're going to do. They're going to reject the report. They have to. Because nobody wants to believe for a moment that their son or their daughter or their husband, father, daughter, a mother, sister, went to die for a dirty son of a bitching liar like George W. Bush. That's impossible. for so many families of so many dead soldiers to try to process that. You mean my son died based on lies? Here it is. 935 lies. And they are still lying. Tomorrow morning at the press briefing. And Kathy, let's get some we haven't had too much Cappuccino Perino lately. Let's see how she responds to this report. Unbelievable. All right. To your phone calls. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Let me ratchet it up and pissing even more Democrats off. And okay. No offense to AJ, but I swear if I hear one more person use that kind of logic for voting for just for any Democrat, I swear I'm going to strangle them.
Well, no, you don't mean that. You just mean you're going to get very upset.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. What is it that says that Democrats are automatically just owed our votes? What is it that they stand for today?
I understand what you're saying, Scott, but and I'm not defending AJ. God knows he can defend himself. But I understand that mindset. Like he pointed out when he called in, I've been in that position. I'd vote for a damn snake if it had a D after its Latin name. I would, because to me, Republicans are scum, and Republican leadership are worse than scum. So, no, I know where he's coming from, but I can't go there anymore, and obviously you can't either.
Well, it's not just him particularly, but I'm just saying this kind of mindset, and especially within the last 8 years, they have either been very complicit in allowing this kind of stuff to happen. They don't stand up for people who will get disenfranchised to vote. We've had three elections, actually really four, that they have allowed to go in the hands of people who commit these kind of crimes. They didn't stand up for any of these people. It was an outside party who actually chose to do this. How many times did we beg them, pleaded with them not to allow these morons, these idiots up there on the Supreme Court, these federal judges, all of these policies that are going on right now, within the past year, this rush to fascism. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what it is that Democrats supposedly stand for. Now, thank God I live in a state where you just register to vote and you don't register by party, although the primaries changed a little bit. But you know, technically, for all intents and purposes, I have not been a registered Democrat except in the last 17 years. But, you know, this business that we just owe our votes to the Democrats and they do absolutely nothing to represent us is absolutely ridiculous. And for what you read there, the stuff with this shock and awe and stuff, and I can tell you, and I would never vote for any of these so-called three candidates that are up there. Two of these candidates voted for this war. Two of these, and one of the candidates were sitting up there and on the Intelligence Committee when this stuff happened. And in all possibility, two of them were very complicit in some of these things that were going on. So I'm going to tell you right now, for that reason alone, I could never vote for any of these people. And it just really just sickens me that the fact that, you know, you claim that people claim that Democrats are supposed to be so better and they're supposed to be for allowing all ideas and stuff like that. I swear, it's like watching one of those old elections in Iraq where 99% of the people vote for Saddam Hussein only because there's no other candidate up there. Mm-hmm. And there are five candidates in the race, not just three. There are a total of five. Mike Gravel and Dennis Kucinich are very much still in it. So I'm tired of hearing this nonsense about this focus on supposedly the three horse races and all of that. And for the people who are so gung-ho on John Edwards and stuff, I tell you, why don't they encourage him to run as an independent if he doesn't get the nomination? Will he do that? Well, let's see about that. You know, I just, you know, I'm sick and tired of listening to this kind of nonsense. And it's just, you know, it goes on and on. We talk about Democrats are supposed to be so much better. They think that all I can say, well, because I'm a Democrat or I'm a liberal or I'm a progressive and stuff like that, that's all we got to do to show ourselves as being better. In the meanwhile, you know what's going to happen. You know, they're going to play, the Republicans are going to play to these kind of weaknesses and stuff. not to mention these voting machines. Well, who can trust the results that come out of those? And I don't see Democrats rushing to do anything about trying to do anything about changing the results of these or taking these things out. In fact, some of them are very complicit in it. Some of these Secretary of States that are Democrat, like the one up in Maryland, mm-hmm. very complicit on having these things there. I don't see any of them challenging the results of these elections that come up. So, you know, it just really angers me to sit and listen to people be so apathetic and don't even look into the candidates' past and what they have voted for and their positions on things and stuff. And what really sickens me is to hear people talk about Edwards. Well, it seems to me that they've sold their values out against having soldiers come home, especially when not only did he vote for this war, but he was on the Intelligence Committee. And I don't hear any of these mainstream candidates talk about civil rights, yet they were all lawyers. Two of them voted for the Patriot Act, and one of them, he doesn't want to repeal it. He just says change it. Well, how do you change something that you never read in the first damn place? You got all of these little slimy provisions that were slipped into the Patriot Act that nobody knows about. And Hillary, she just says policy review. She doesn't want to repeal that or the Military Commissions Act or any of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sorry. I could never get behind any of these candidates. Never.
All right. I got you loud and clear. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
Thank you.
All right. Well, Scott had something to say. Earl is calling from Vacaville, California. Earl, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey.
I got some statements to say, not necessarily related to what the prior caller was saying, but I got a lot of stuff to say.
Well, we don't have a whole lot of time.
Okay.
If you don't get it said tonight, you can certainly call back in. Go ahead.
Okay, I can do it in 30 seconds. I can tell you that.
Okay. okay. Thanks a lot, Earl. What was that about? Huh?
That's 30 seconds of my life I'll never get back again.
I don't know. Maybe it was making a point with 30 seconds of silence. I have no idea. Jeremy is calling from Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's going.
Going where? That's the question.
Really?
We're going to hell. Notice the economy lately?
Whose? Ours?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. What does the economy mean to the general working population anymore, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Our economy has been based on subjective crap for a long time anyway, so as long as you have a
hey,
job...
Hold on a second, yeah. Jeremy. I've got to do a break here. We'll come right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Bolla. This is Nova M. Then before the hour, one more time, a program note. We are now back on the air in San Francisco from 9 p.m. until midnight, San Francisco time, on the Green 960, formerly The Quake. So I want to welcome you Bay Area listeners. Once again, you don't have to be an insomniac to hear the program anymore. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program, Billy Foster, our technical director, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. All right, we were talking with Jeremy in Huntington Beach. All right, Jeremy, go ahead. Let her rip.
Oh, hey, I'm sorry, I kind of got off subject there. I think we need to just sort of shift the way we look at this. What more could an enemy of our country want besides somebody from the inside, which crushes our economy, our political system,
sure.
And our army, frankly?
Mm-hmm.
When you think about Prescott Bush financially embedded with the Nazis, it kind of takes on a new light, you know? These people have, for years, put class above borders forever, you know?
Yeah, that's true. If a foreign source were doing to the United States what the Bush administration has done to us, we would attack them probably now with nuclear weapons.
Isn't it funny, too, how every talking point of the Republican Party, everything they supposedly hate, economically, they actually do it. Our sovereign border is undermined. I mean, our political power, our democracy, with all these trade agreements and all this neoliberal trade policies that we've been doing mm-hmm. for 30 years or more. I mean, every single thing they say that therefore, economically, they completely undermine. Isn't that interesting?
Sure. Well, and it's not just their position on economics. Every time Bush talks about freedom or justice or democracy, he is lying through his teeth. He is a Nazi pig from the moment he gets up in the morning until he goes to bed at night. He's a Nazi pig. He's a totalitarian from the word go. He's no more interested in democracy than Joe Stalin was or Adolf Hitler. He is absolutely a liar on just every single issue. But I hear you, Jeremy.
Yeah, I don't like I never used to believe that, but I mean the more I look at it, yeah, he may actually be a Nazi. I mean, and they're definitely anti-democratic. His cohorts are they're pretty honest about it internally. You know, if you look at the financial papers, I mean, really.
Mm-hmm.
And who haven't we supplied, our supposed enemies, who haven't we supplied with weapons? Iran, Iraq, we created Al-Qaeda, you name it.
Yeah.
We
gave Osama bin Laden more Stinger missiles than he could possibly handle. We built the scum sucker who runs Pakistan. It just goes on and on. And I certainly get your point. Jeremy, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Let me ask you something, Truth Seekers. Now that it's out there, 935 false statements that led us into a war that has taken the lives of hundreds of thousands of people, why does anyone out there still believe the Bush crime family story about what happened on September 11th, 2001? Why? Everything these sons of bitches talk about is a lie. Has anyone yet produced a picture of that jetliner slamming into the Pentagon? If is there one picture that anyone can produce that shows the jetliner slamming into the Pentagon, please, for Christ's sake, send it to me, which will shut me up. Why? Why? Do so many Americans, I don't know if it's a majority anymore, I think it is, still believe what the Bush crime family and this little piglet Giuliani and the rest of these people who have attached themselves to this story like lampreys, why does anyone still believe that one? How many people, were just absolutely demonized because they said, wait a second, Saddam has no weapons of mass destruction. Huh? How many people were shouted down in this country who said, no, that we're going to war under false pretenses. Don't do this. How many people were shouted down, told that they were tinfoil hat idiots, traitorous, un-American, unpatriotic? And how many of you sneaky right-wing bastards who listened to this program made those charges? How do you feel now? All you immoral bastards, you couldn't care less, could you? And how many people have been demonized, marginalized, told they're crazy, they're tinfoil hat co-conspirators who have said the official story of what happened in this country on September 11, 2001 is a filthy lie? And it goes on. Every time I bring up the 2001 attack on this country from any position other than the Bush crime family's position, I get the emails from all sorts of people that say, come on, Mike, you're going to lose me now. Come on. I like to listen to your program. I think you're just crazy enough, but don't go that crazy. Come on, Mike, calm down. But if we were lied to 935 times in a two-year period in a run-up to a goddamn war, a war that has destabilized seven countries, if we were lied to that many times by every single senior member of the Bush crime family, then why do some of you people still believe that the story about 9/11 is true? I don't know how you do that. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.